Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt. Our guest today, Stephanie Nelson, academic administrator from the Tennessee Virtual Junior High School. What does that mean? Tell us a little bit about that.
So I am functioning like a principal. Tennessee Virtual is across the state of Tennessee, the entire state. It is an online virtual school, so it's not the same as homeschool. We partner with a county out of East Tennessee, Union County, and so we kind of help them solve some of their issues that they have that they couldn't really solve just within their district. And so we partner with them, but then we are also contracted with a big company called Stride. And within that company, we have contracted workers that come in and teach and partner with that district so that we can kind of help them solve their issues.
Okay. Principal with a virtual school. So we're going to dig into that a little bit, because what does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
Yes.
But my first favorite question that I ask for everyone is, who's your favorite teacher growing up?
My favorite teacher, and let's start out at the beginning, was Sesame Street.
Okay,
seriously.
Okay.
You know, virtual school is older than we think. Sesame Street was my very first teacher that captivated my attention, and I really learned a lot from it, taught myself how to do a lot of things from Sesame Street. And then moving forward, had some really good teachers, but one really stood out in the fifth grade, Miss Carol Bostick. She and I still stay in touch. She was one of those that when she did something, she did it the whole entire way. So she would hold these really high expectations, and we would do these really big projects and things. So, for example, like when it was time to study fire prevention, she just didn't take it there. We went to the radio station and made commercials at the local radio station for Fire Safety Week. And then another time we were learning about Tennessee history and its laws. And so even though she did it on her own time, because there was no such thing as funded field trips back in the day, we would go to Nashville to watch law being made in session. We went to Fort Nashboro. We even one time went to the Cumberland Science Museum, which I don't think that's what it's called anymore. But anyway, not only did we do the science things, but we saw Laser Floyd. So it was really, she was just a very, very just complete comprehensive teacher that held us to a really high standard, but, you know, made us want to work for it. And then last one that I can't not talk about is high school history teacher Laura Carter here locally in Cookeville, for different reasons. She was not only an amazing teacher, but when I was going through some really, really tough times, she would always meet us at the door. And one day she looked at me straight in my face and she took me by the hand and patted me on the hand and said, "Sweetie, I want you to go to the bathroom. I want you to just take a minute, clean your face off, and just take a deep breath. It's going to be okay, but just come back when you're ready." And it's just like Rita Pearson says, kids won't learn from people they don't like. And I would follow that woman anywhere. And so she was amazing.
All those teachers that have that influence, you know, people forget there's the academic side, and that's fine. That's a given. But people, you know, oftentimes they don't see that side of the teacher that's wearing the 97 other hats that get you through the day as a student.
I'm really amazed. I tell my well, actually, it started with one time a student asked me. I was teaching sixth grade, and she was like, "You know, do you like being a teacher?" And I said, "I do 95% of things that I don't necessarily love, to be able to do the 5% that I do love, which is to be there with the kids and to really grow them and stretch them and be able to do things that I otherwise wouldn't get to do." So,
mm-hmm. So along the way, I'm sure that those teachers had that influence. How mm-hmm. did you end up in education? Was it
great question?
The straight path or a roundabout way? A lot of people have a roundabout story and
sure.
how they got into education.
Well, we'll start back from the very first memory that I had of this. I was sitting in a third grade classroom. I was an actual third grader. And I don't remember exactly what was going on, but I remember my teacher, Miss Martin, was kind of being a little extra bossy, in my opinion. And in my head, I thought, well, someday I'm going to be the teacher so that I can be the boss of the classroom instead of sitting on this side. And then later on, as things progressed, it was really my intention to be someone that was that made a difference in some capacity. And I also equally wanted to be a mother and a wife. Both of those endeavors were like non-negotiable for me. So when I thought about it, and I thought, what better way to really make a difference is to have that impact on kids and change trajectories before trajectories are too late to change. And it's, I wake up every day going, we don't have to do this. We get to do this. And so that's just kind of been my guiding, you know, force through this. And it's just been everything I never knew I always wanted.
Along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's always fun to hear the paths and to hear those influences to get people, to get teachers and educators. And I've been talking to a lot of people in a lot of different types of education, and it's fun to get there. Now, did you ever see yourself in an online education environment early on? Let's back up to when you first got out of college.
No. Okay. So got out of college. It took me a little bit to get there. I did 3 years at Tech, and then I decided to come up for air, and I went out west, and I took some classes at Westminster College and University of Utah. I just didn't know quite. I knew I wanted to be in education, but I wasn't quite ready to be, you know, a complete and total independent adult for some reason at 22. And so I decided to just kind of slow things down. And then from there, had another few jobs, and one day decided, nope, I'm ready to go back. So I went back and got back into it and started out thinking, I'm just going to be this cute little elementary school teacher. And really quickly, I got a third grade position, and it was awful. I felt like a red flashing light in a white canvas. Everybody else could frou-frou things, and I'm just going, I don't care who's the line leader. I don't care. Like, why aren't you working? Oh, your pencil broke? Why didn't you tell? I didn't get it. So the next year, the principal and I both knew that this was not the best fit for me. And I ended up taking some opportunities to take some leaves of absences. And one day, one of those led me into an eighth grade history class. And I walked in the door, and by the time the day was over, I was like, these are my people. Now, with all that being said, we're talking like 1996. So there really wasn't a whole lot out there as far as virtual. But then not long after that, I remember the day that it really hit me. I was in a fourth grade classroom at Parkview. Yes, I said I didn't do littles, but that's where life took me for just a year. And we were using something, and I want to say it was something like peach tree, peach something or other. But anyway, I picked up on it really quickly. I was doing a lesson with my students on the projection board. It wasn't yet the Promethean board, but it was a projection board. And it dawned on me really quickly. These kids were so engaged with this, almost like I was with Sesame Street. And I was like, they're learning more in a 30-minute period in a day than if I designed the whole thing for a week and did my lessons individually in that way. And so it kind of sparked something, but I really didn't know what I didn't know. So I didn't know what to do with that until later when I went to grad school, and I thought I wanted to be a guidance counselor, and I quickly learned I did not. I do appreciate the classes that I had because they helped me understand some things about the way that students' brains are wired and things that will shut them down, things that will, help open them back up. and that part of the learning. So I'm not sad at all that I took a little bit of a detour there, but then I saw this program that you happen to be have just started, and for educational technology, and I was like, that is what I'm looking for. That's the like X factor that I'm looking for. Is in my head, I was like, I'm doing all these great things, but I feel like they're antiquated, and I really want to prepare kids for their authentic future. So really what I was looking to do was kind of get on the front end of blended learning in a brick and mortar, you know, environment. And I saw myself really just kind of hopefully kind of almost selling other teachers, like getting it down and then teaching them how to do the craft and getting them on board. But life took me in another direction, and I ended up leaving brick and mortar and going to this virtual school gig. And 10 years later, here I am.
Here we are.
Yes.
And it's funny how those influences, because I always tell people, stick with your passion. You know, if you think you want to go with the littles and you get there and the passion is not there, let's steer you in a different direction.
Absolutely. And you don't know what you don't know until you get there. And then you're like, oh, this explains things. So, you know, it's just no regrets at all. Just it's just been quite an interesting journey along the way.
For sure. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about what you're doing in that virtual world.
Awesome.
Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking to Miss Stephanie Nelson from the Tennessee Virtual Junior High School, Tennessee Virtual School. So we talked a little bit about how you kind of bobbed and weaved into the technology world, which I'm glad that you did, because you've enjoyed that.
And it's
been a shift, and some people latch onto it, others not so much.
Right.
And then it's obviously a rapidly changing field when you start talking about technology.
Yes.
All the time. So I guess, first of all, what is a day in the life of an academic administrator, essentially a principal of sorts? What does it look like in the virtual school? Because you're not going down the hall to break up the fights and monitor the classrooms.
Or am I?
Or are you?
So very great question. It has evolved. I started this out as a classroom teacher, so that gave me a really good insight. Never really thought about being an administrator at all in my career, but in that environment, I don't have to manage a building, so that was really what my apprehension was. And also, outside of the confines of a building, I found a lot of people like were leaning on me. So I went that direction. So what does it look like? It's at the beginning, it really looked like just trying to get teachers to come on board. I mean, really pre-2020, most people were like me. They didn't know that this existed. And they really, I mean, we were like sifting through, you know, trying to get some people that just could even show up and do that kind of thing. But it has rapidly changed. When COVID hit and other people had tried this out and they started seeing kind of similar things that I saw, they were like scrambling to get in. So actually, the pendulum has swung to the complete opposite side, and now we have the cream of applicants and things that come to want to teach for us. The only, you know, drawback is, depending on where you're from, you know, as to what you might lose as far as pay, because, you know, more metropolitan areas have better pay, and then more rural areas, they don't have great pay, so we're like a really good fit for them. But as far as what my day looks like, a lot of it is operational. If some of the platforms are down, we operate like I always say it's more like a blended learning environment, but it just happens to be online and all the players are in their homes. So students go through a bell schedule just like they would anywhere else. Our classrooms are set up to Tennessee state standards as far as the numbers of students and things like that. So we, you know, everything that we do in that way just mirrors exactly what you would get in a building. However, we've got a learning management system that is kind of the paper side, I would say, that is, you know, if you're it's called D2L, which is Desire to Learn. It's very similar to Canvas, which is another popular type of thing. Blackboard is another one that's very similar as well. And so that's the side that the students work in. But then there's also the live classroom attendance. And so we, you know, teachers run through their bell schedule just like a normal teacher would throughout the day. And then they also provide a couple of sessions of RTI, either tier two or tier three. And so they enter into a classroom, which kind of mirrors a Promethean board meets Zoom. And so there's tools and all kinds of whistles and bells within that, but also ways for kids to go into breakout groups and things like that. And so what I do from the back end is I drop into their classes just like I would if I were in a building, and I monitor what they do, do walkthroughs, do evals through 10 Compass and that kind of thing. And then also we deal a lot more with parental challenges maybe than others would, because parents are either there or when they don't know as much about it, so they get a little nervous, so they believe their kid, and the kid will tell all kinds of interesting stories and things like that. So there's a lot of that kind of thing. But then this year has been a really big challenge year with kids are getting savvy, and they are learning how to use the platforms and outside external platforms a little bit more regularly. So it's been a challenge for me to shift and get teachers to really stay on top of keeping kids engaged in classrooms and using those tools to be able to monitor, are they logged in? Are they engaged? Are they, you know, participating and doing those things? And are your activities the kind that would make them want to put these things down and be there?
Mm-hmm. So speaking of activities, so let's say you're teaching fifth graders.
Okay.
And they need to have some kind of science experiment.
Yes.
Something hands-on that you want. And obviously from the teacher side, you know, the teacher can demonstrate that. But what does that look like on the kids' side?
I'm glad that you asked that, because that was the one thing that I transitioned to is I'd always been an ELA teacher, transitioned to being a science teacher for the first time in this environment. And so I had that exact thing going. So our company sends out a box, and it's got some of the things, but not all of the things. So, for example, if you were doing an experiment on electromagnetism, and so one of the things that we did was make a homopolar motor, which basically makes a paperclip dance around a battery and shows the flow of the electrons. Well, the kids that had the things, they did that. But then I also had a different side that if you didn't have all the ingredients per se, that you would do a sim and a research thing. And that way you weren't just sitting around and partnering with somebody who were the haves and not – everybody got to the same destination just in a different way. Or if I were doing a chemistry experiment, I would dress up as Einstein on the camera and we would do these things. But then they have all these questions and activities and things that they would do to follow along. So lots of different ways to
lots of different ways to
get there.
Yes. And teachers are so creative that, you know, I'm sure that on the back end, if it's something – you can scale it back. You know, you can have students get those items, create the activities so that students have items in their home.
Absolutely.
That they can use.
It's just, if you design it correctly, and I always go back to backwards design, if you design things correctly, the buy-in is there. So the kids are wanting to go out and get the things, and they're wanting to go out and do the projects and those kinds of things, because a lot of times those are the students that haven't always been successful in, you know, like math or ELA, but then you get them excited about something and all of a sudden not only are they doing better in this environment, but they're also – their math scores are coming up. Their ELA – their reading is coming up because they get to look forward to something like that.
And the virtual school kids are all taking the same exams. I mean, all the same standards
Absolutely.
Are there for those
students. We go
students.
Live and in person to take TCAPs every mm-hmm. year and, mm-hmm. and EOCs. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So, it in a lot of ways, it looks the same, but then there are some ways that it looks different. Mm-hmm. But all different shades of technology. So, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about where virtual school is going. Welcome back to Local Matters, talking to Stephanie Nelson, academic administrator from Tennessee Virtual Junior High School, which is a mouthful.
Yes.
Basically, in a principal role.
Yes.
In a virtual school. So we've been talking a little bit about what that looks like. So moving forward, okay, pre-COVID, people mm-hmm. didn't quite understand how it all worked. I think people understand more now what a virtual school looks like, and obviously enrollment spiked.
Huge
during COVID.
Spikes. And then also again this year because of the, you know, school safety issues and the threats that were going around. We really drop off after Labor Day, but this year, not so much.
Not so much. So had a lot more students. So one of the questions with more students mm-hmm. means you need more teachers.
Correct.
How do you go out and recruit, of course, a regular school system who's got a person in the classroom, it's mm-hmm. not going to want to hear you. They don't want to lose a physical teacher to a virtual school.
Absolutely.
We're all in it together to educate students. How do you recruit teachers? How do you explain to them what virtual school teaching looks like for eighth graders?
Absolutely, because it looks different wherever you go. There are different models. Sorry, not to brag or anything, but I feel like our model has gone through so many different prototypes and we finally found, you know, our niche. And I think that we've done a good job finding it ahead of the curve where it's not so much asynchronous learning, where the kids are only on the learning management side trying to figure things out by themselves and then have to go and ask for a teacher's help. It is the opposite where we are, you know, providing all of those supports and providing that relationship for those students. And so when we are interviewing, we start with that, you know, what do you think that virtual learning looks like? Because some people are wanting or thinking it's going to be one thing when it's really something else. The ones that you know that are in it for the right reasons are there because they want to be and have those connections with the students in the classroom. And so it's gotten pretty easy to, you know, get a pool of applicants because we have nationwide recruiters that really advertise and those kinds of things. So it's not too terribly hard. Plus, we've got pools of applicants across the state and sometimes even right outside the borders and things too.
Mm-hmm. And so when you get into that world, so you mentioned the blended learning, and I know that flipped learning, the flipped classroom, that was a big deal for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that makes sense in slices for
Absolutely.
Certain topics, but to take that and scale it up, you have just that. If you're not interacting synchronously,
sure,
then you just got kids that are just kind of wandering and, you know, making it up on their own and trying to figure it out without that interaction from the teachers.
Absolutely. And even still, it's hard. You know, these are real, you know, real human beings, and they've chosen us for a certain reason. It's either, you know, sometimes it's health related. We've had families, it's a religious difference, and it's really nice for that. It's also you know, students that have serious anxiety issues that they've just not been able to, you know, figure out and navigate through. And they just need a different place to kind of grow and kind of deviate from those things. So there's a myriad of different things that this environment solves. Plus, in my opinion, it's also another great solution because what I feel like we've come to, you know, still in Tennessee is there are little pockets of blended education and little pockets of this, but for the most part, we're still so far behind what I believe that our students are going to need for their authentic futures, and it really worries me. I really think that we're doing them a disservice if we are providing an education pencil to paper versus building, like scaffolding these skills that they will need that will give them the edge against, you know, others when they go out into the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so along with that, as you build that student and as they move through, you know, they have things in, and I said jokingly, you're not monitoring the cafeteria, you know, or breaking up a fight. But they still have those needs. They still have those social needs, those
absolutely
behavioral needs, the counseling, the all those things. Mm-hmm. How do you provide those services in a virtual environment?
It's amazing. It's really, really wonderful. We have for my school in particular, we have a designated counselor per grade. Not only do they, you know, they can drop things at a moment notice and come into a classroom. They also, for our students that are struggling academically, I have set up an ICU program. It, you know, stands for ICU, mm-hmm. and which is kind of like academic probation. But I didn't really want it to be more punitive because it's just additional layers of support to help students be successful. And so those students, they don't get to watch recordings to get their attendance, which you can do that from time to time, you know, if you are, you know, staying on top of things. But they also have to check in with their counselors. We also have attendance specialists. That's truancy. Uh-huh. You know, but we're not there to try to, you know, like get out, you know, we really want to partner and help this to be a successful endeavor, because sometimes we're getting kids that for them, they have just been so broken and so beaten down in wherever they are. I mean, they're either just feeling, you know, just attacked, or, you know, maybe they come from the wrong side of the tracks or whatever. And this is their last hurrah. They want to come somewhere and feel successful. And so that's where we just, excuse me, go at it with everything that we've got to try to help breathe that life back into that child and be able to get them, you know, on their way that way.
And it's a full service education, even
absolutely
though
special ed. Virtual. You know, we have contracts with all the services. So if any services that a student would have gotten in brick and mortar, they're getting it there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing how far along, you know, I think we've come. Especially,
absolutely.
I mean, COVID was really like that shot that just pushed it over the edge to help normalize that as an option.
Absolutely. It was, you know, I have a lot of connections with different people, and I just kind of stay, it kind of helps me hold myself accountable to some things. You know, I see some areas where, you know, different places can invent it to solve whatever issues that they need solving. But for us, it's particularly challenging, but it's also very rewarding. These kids are on the computer all the time, so I feel like, you know, they have the edge because they're typing things, they're looking for things, they're searching for things in a different way. But it's my job, what I've seen as far as teachers go, you know, we'll get really successful teachers that have been so successful in a brick and mortar. But then when they come to virtual, it's almost like they don't know what they don't know. So I go in and I watch so many things, and then we pull them aside and basically load them up with the tools that they need to be able to make that transition. Because I always say it's kind of like it had to be like when Tim Tebow went from, you know, college ball to NFL. You know, they're sitting there and he's always thrown the same way, and all of us, and he's been successful. And now it's basically like we're telling them to put their hand behind their back and to throw with the left hand just as accurately as they were before. And it's mm-hmm. completely different.
Mm-hmm. Whole different set of circumstances and rules and
absolutely
learning styles. And I mean, it is different. It's just different. Not good or bad, but just
absolutely
different.
You know, the biggest thing that I always ask my teachers is, Are students hiding in your classroom? And you know, are you set up? Are you using all the things that you can do so that every child is developing their literacy skills when you're asking these questions in class? And I mean, these are things you can do in brick and mortar as well, mm-hmm. but it became a lot easier for me to see that in a virtual realm. I can look, we've got extra monitors, and so I'll have another platform like ClassKick up over here, and I can see what kids are logged in, what slide they're on, what problem they're working on. I can give them feedback in real time. I can do a quick entrance ticket, exit ticket. A lot of times I'll ask them something that they won't know the answer to, and I'll take a poll on that and say, okay, so 40% of you said A and 30% of you said B. Okay, so now I just want you to pay attention to the lesson, and by the end of this, I want you to tell me if you kept your same answer or if you chose a different answer, and be able to tell me why you kept it that way or why you changed it, like cite that evidence. And so I'm always giving them something that keeps their brains busy, their bodies busy, and all of those things. Whereas in a building, they could be checked out and I would have no idea until I took their papers and graded them later.
Right, right. So maybe even some skills will transition the other way. Transfer back from the virtual school to the physical, to the brick and mortar.
That's my hope. Yeah. That is, I would really love to see that evolution, you know, go into the building as well, because I think that's exactly what I say, is that we're all in the same business. We all have the same goal. It's, you know, just what is best for students always. That's the filter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Along the way, for sure. Okay, we've reached the end of our time, so I appreciate you coming out. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, here on Local Matters with Stephanie Nelson. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.